This program is sponsored by Blazing Grace Ministries.
This radio program is PG-13. Parents strongly caution some material may be inappropriate for children under the age of 13. Send me free. Of the chains holding me.
Is anybody out there hearing me? Send me free.
Jesus' mission was to comfort those who mourn, bind up the brokenhearted, proclaim liberty to captives, and open prison doors for those who are bound. For those who want more than status quo Christianity has to offer, Blazing Grace Radio begins now. And here is your host, Mike Janung.
Hey, Mike Janung here, and welcome to 2025, and welcome to the arena, the battlefield that we are in. And I just want to say thank you for you who have been joining us and listening to us on a consistent basis. I look forward to seeing what God's going to do this year. Also looking forward to seeing what fruit God brings about. And in case you're listening in on the first time, wondering who's Blazing Grace, we are an international ministry to persons who struggle with sex addiction, porn addiction, adultery, any kind of sexual sin. We work with individuals. We work with couples. I've written 9 books. I speak in churches and lead retreats and conferences. I've given Sunday morning messages at churches. We offer groups online by Zoom and by phone conference call, support and prayer groups. We also have an 8-week course for men and a 10-week course for wives. We offer counseling, me and my team, for men and women and couples. Do we have a lot of couples coming to us for help? Usually the people who come to us for help, they're not in a good place. Usually they're in a crisis. And this issue of sexual sin and pornography in the church is not going away. It continues to increase. And one thing we saw last year is that the daily news reports of Christians in trusted leadership positions, such as a pastor, a youth pastor, or a worship leader, where they're exposed for some kind of sexual sin or illegal pornography, and arrested even, those have continued. They haven't slowed down. And the other thing that's always grievous to see is when somebody from a large church, a large nationally known church, falls, and we were seeing that last year too. These issues of sexual sin and pornography in the church are not going away. They're not going to just all of a sudden evaporate and disappear on their own. We have to confront them, and we have to fight them. And there's a cost to it. This month, I'm not going to use the word celebrate, but this month is my 3-year anniversary with long COVID. So it's not as bad as it was the first year, where there were plenty of times when it was difficult to breathe, but I still deal with the fatigue crashes and some of the neurological effects and some of the other things, but we still got to pour out. We still have battles to fight, and I would much rather be weak and relying on God's strength and be right in the middle of the fight than sit there and go cower in a corner and watch the world fall apart. And sometimes we're called to fight, and we're not going to feel good. I think sometimes we put too much weight on how do we feel. Sometimes I feel really rotten before a ministry event or even coming here into the radio station. Sometimes I just feel lousy physically or emotionally or whatever, but I know it's part of the game, part of the battle. And then I show up, and then God gives me what I need at the moment that I need it, and then I move on in His strength. And sometimes He lets us be whittled down to where we have nothing of our own strength. And that's a good thing, because we want our flesh dead. We want to walk in the power of the Spirit. We don't want to live in the power of self. that's a big mistake. And I saw one survey that said that 70% of pastors spend 5 minutes a day in prayer. That was a Focus on the Family survey from a while back. If you're spending 5 minutes a day in prayer, you're basically living in your flesh. You're a dead man walking, spiritually speaking. That's not going to cut it in the times we're in. We need an hour a day with God every single day. And the few times that I miss time with the Lord, I notice my flesh is a little more grumpy. It just doesn't work. And we need to be in prayer. We need the power that comes from prayer. And so my tradition here in the first broadcast of the year is to share my story. So I'm going to keep up with that. I was raised in a Christian family, but we had a lot of issues, problems growing up. There was physical abuse. I didn't hear the words, "I love you," growing up that I can remember. There was little to no, probably no physical affection or hugs. So a lot of my experience with touch was not good. It was, you know, the beatings and such. And so by the time I'm 10, 11, 12, I don't have a whole lot of self-confidence. And then one day when I'm 14 years old, I'm staying home from school sick. I'm alone in the house with my mother, and she walked into the room and molested me. And when that happened, my mind just, it shut down. Psychologists call it disassociation, where I just could not accept the reality that this just happened, that my mother had just done this to me. And how did anyone put that one together and come to terms with it? But a 14-year-old doesn't have the emotional capacity to really deal with that. And maybe that's God's gift at the moment. So what happened was the memory just vanished after that happened. And then it wasn't long after that. I mean, we had been going to church up to that time, but I internalized the idea, well, if this is what church is about, then what do I need it for? There's no sense of acceptance or love, and felt more like punishment. If I'm going to screw up, here comes the beating. So what do I need it for? And I started throwing myself into pornography, daily binges with porn and masturbation, sexual sin, prostitutes, sex with prostitutes, an affair. As a young man, as a single man, I had an affair with a mother, married mother of three kids. But also around that time, I started becoming suicidal. I started having a lot of self-loathing, a lot of shame. I couldn't stand myself, couldn't stand the skin I was in. I didn't understand what was happening at the time. I got into cutting a bit. That just felt like what I deserved. Just felt like I always deserved punishment or a beating or something. And there was one day where I was literally holding a .357 Magnum, trying to get the courage to finish my life. But by God's grace, I didn't go that far. And so I got a job at a machine tool distribution company in Southern California. This was back in the 1980s, and discovered I had my share of drive and ambition. I'm a type A, very driven type, and started making progress and climbing the corporate ladder. But I was still empty and miserable, and picked up an sexually transmitted disease, gonorrhea, from a one-night stand at a bar with a woman. There was promiscuity, a lot of drinking, sometimes to the point where, you know, the hangovers, and those were so miserable. And one night I drank so much I blacked out and slept in my vomit. There was cocaine, there was LSD, there was angel dust, there was hash, which is a form of marijuana. So by the time I was 23 years old, I was just a screwed up mess, chemically, emotionally, and spiritually. I was depressed, angry at sometimes, but I didn't know why. And God started calling me out of all that mess. One night, And at this time, I'm living with a woman, the woman I told you about who I had the affair with. I think I was around 22, 23 at the time. She was 10 years older than me, and she had three kids. And she had divorced her husband after we started the affair. But her husband had divorced her. I mean, had an affair on her. So it was just a big traumatic, screwed up mess. And one night, I'm feeling crummy, and it felt like God just prompting me to go to church. It was a Sunday night, and, you know, we don't really do Sunday night church anymore, but this was in the 1980s. I went to church, and the preacher was talking about Abraham and how God called Abraham away from his father Terah's home, basically to go and follow the Lord out in the wilderness to where he would take him. And then the pastor right then and there said, there's some of you right now, and you're in a place God doesn't want you to be, and he's calling you out of that mess. And that just speared me, and I knew that God was calling me. He was calling me away from the depravity and the sin that I was living in. And I would love to tell you that I just walked away from that relationship that night, but I didn't. It took a good year before I broke away. Because when you start having sex with somebody, a bond is formed. And even though I knew I needed to break off that relationship, and that's what God wanted me to do, I continued to have sex with her, and it made it so very difficult to break up. Finally, like I said, a year later, after trying two or three times to break up and not being successful, I finally was able to do so. But it was a horrible process. And so if you're a believer and you're dating somebody who is not a believer, you need to walk away and step back from that. I can tell you from personal experience, that is not a good thing to be doing, because there's going to come a time when God's going to say, you need to choose between me and this other person. And he's already saying that now. He already says that to us every day. We can't have our sin and have him. We're going to have to choose at one point or another. You can't have both, and I certainly couldn't have both. So as God would work it out, I started looking for a counselor, stopped dating girls who were not believers, walked away from the drugs, walked away from the alcohol, but I figured, hey, I'm doing porn and masturbation alone. I'm not hurting anyone. And so I just kept it to myself, started going back to church. And then I started seeing this female counselor. And the second time I met with her, she could already see some of what was going on. And she says to me, you hate women, don't you? And I was stunned. Where are you coming off with that, I'm thinking. And I said, no, I don't hate women. And I'm thinking to myself, I got a big time lust problem with them, but I don't. How can you say I hate them? But she saw it, and she kept, over the next few sessions, she kept poking and prodding, and until one day, the memory of what my mother had done flashed forth, full industrial strength in my mind. And when that happened, I went crazy, basically. I bounced between rage and anger, and then depression. I would be real low and one day and one moment, and then I would zip up to just being enraged. I mean, how can anybody do this to one of your kids? And people, this sexual abuse is rape of the soul, and it is very traumatic and very devastating. It's like taking the most sensitive parts of your heart and then having somebody's spirit with a knife. And trust becomes very difficult. Intimacy becomes difficult. Self-loathing is a big problem. So if you've been sexually abused or molested, I get you. It is a very difficult thing to heal from. And the tragedy is a lot of people don't know what to do with it. So I met with her for a while. And she helped me with a few things, but I didn't really recover from it all the way. There was a lot of time spent expressing my feelings and my anger and my rage, but it kind of stopped there, and there's more to that healing process than just expressing all the anger and the rage. So then I met Michelle. We got married. She was a believer, still is. We got married in 1989. But I figured, like most foolish, naive young men, that getting married was going to fix my lust problem. Well, I had it backwards. Getting married makes it 10 times worse because we bring all of our false coping mechanisms into our marriage, and my go-to was porn, lust, sensuality, masturbation. And so just months into our marriage, I'm masturbating daily with porn all over again. I feel like such a hypocrite. And so this went on for a bit. And then in 1991, I think it was June of 91, I took a business trip. And at that point, pictures were no longer enough. And then I ended up having sex with a prostitute. And when that happened, I just felt like such a hypocrite. I mean, I knew that my wife thought I was this great Christian guy, and I'm faking it. She doesn't know half of what she's married. So I called her and I told her, and she broke down sobbing. And I realized for the first time in my life, I had to get help. And we went to I went back home, and a lot of trauma and crying and confusion and messed up communication. It was horrible. We went to a marriage conference. And I had not told anybody in the church. And I took a chance, and I went up to the pastor who was leading the conference, and I had my head down. I said, I had this problem with pornography. And immediately he just got mad, and he yelled at me, and he said, just stop doing it. Just stop. And I just walked away, and I thought, that's it. I'm done getting help in the church, because if I could just stop doing it, what do I need you for? What do I need help for? I was in too deep. So to make a long story short, I spent the next 8 years trying to break free. I found an SA 12-step group. I started attending those and getting a measure of freedom. I started reading my Bible every day and praying and getting involved with ministry and working the steps and doing all these things. And basically, by the end of 98, I'm still in bondage to that stuff. And I just gave up. I said, God, I've done all these things. And also hundreds of hours of counseling and thousands of dollars later. So by the end of 98, I just gave up. I just said, God, either you're the God you say you are who can change lives, or this whole church thing is a big joke. Because faking it and being a nice guy and memorizing my Bible verses hadn't got me anywhere, and I'm empty, and I'm miserable, and I don't know how. I know my heart is really screwed up, but I don't know where to go. And then the Lord, over the next period of weeks, starts putting all these verses in front of me. If you seek me with all your heart, you will find me. And I realized I had never sought God himself ever. I had sought money, I had sought women, I had sought lust, I had sought success, all the things that everybody else seeks, you know, to look good at church. I had sought all those things, but I had never sought God. So just 2 weeks later, after an intense time of seeking, during which I was going after God hard and saying things like, Lord, I want you. I don't know what I'm doing, but I need you. I want you more than anything else. Please fill me with your Holy Spirit. There was a massive breakthrough during a time when I was reading 1 John 4, where it says, he who abides in love abides in God, and God abides in him. And I just said, God, why is it every time I read about your grace and love, I get depressed? And the Holy Spirit spoke immediately, and he said, because you don't believe it. And then I realized I knew the scripture, I knew the truth, but I had not believed it. And believing the truth and knowing the truth are two different things. And at that moment, it's like a valve turned in my heart, and all this love and joy and peace and power flooded in. It's like nothing I had ever experienced before. And I think, finally, this is what I've been after. This is the abundant life. This isn't just being a nice guy. This is power. This is wonderful. This is everything I've been hungry for. And then I've got all this joy and I want to help people, but I think, you know, I'm a freak because we don't talk about porn and sexual sin. And this was back in 2000. I don't hear that from the pulpit. When's the last time you heard of masturbation or how to deal with those things? And I started doing research and seeing that half of Christian men are viewing porn and 20% of women. This was 25 years ago. And I'm like, half? How could it be half? We're not talking about this stuff in church and almost destroyed my life, almost destroyed my marriage. And you're telling me half and we're doing nothing? Because what? We're too afraid to talk about sex? This is just crazy. So I'm going to read to you an article that just came out just a couple weeks ago from Movie Guy. And the title is Pornography Use Among Christians Reaches All-Time High. And it says, porn use among Christians, including pastors, has now surpassed the national average for Americans in general. And this rise is doing so largely unchecked, the Liberty Council reported. New data suggests a majority of Christian men and a rising percentage of Christian women view pornography occasionally, while a majority of pastors have struggled with porn at some point in their lives. Currently, 61% of all U.S. adults report viewing porn. A study from Barna and Pure Desire Ministries found that 75% of Christian men and 40% of Christian women view porn on some level, so the church is the porn industry's biggest customer. I don't even know sometimes how to grasp that. Because if you think about the people you're sitting in church, I mean, everybody looks good, right? Everybody does the whole smile thing. And I know what doing that smile thing and faking it is about because I did it so many years. And let's be honest, aren't we, a lot of us, really faking it when we walk into church on Sunday? We're dying inside or we're in bondage to some kind of sin, be it pornography or sexual sin or maybe anger. Maybe we got a problem with anger, selfishness, pride, drugs, alcohol, no matter what it is, it doesn't matter. But we walk into church faking it and then we, you know, we do our three songs and a sermon and then we go home. I don't see that that's the way it's supposed to be when I read the book of Acts. When they were devoted to prayer, fellowship, and teaching, and today 80% of Christians are isolated and cut off, but this is how we're training them. Each and every one of you who is a believer in Jesus Christ should be meeting with another believer once a week, every week, for the purpose of support, accountability, and prayer. Our churches should be houses of prayer where prayer meetings are being lit up all the time. The enemy has a very large grip in the church, in pastors, at every level in this area of sexual sin. The strongholds are big, and I know because I've had plenty of experience where we were set up to do a conference and we think everything's going okay, and then we walk in there and something has changed. Maybe the church didn't even promote it. I've seen this multiple times. Who do you think is behind that? And this is because the enemy has a lot of Christians, a lot of believers, in bondage to sexual sin. Do you remember what Jesus said the great commission is? Be a really nice guy and be comfortable and make everybody happy. And I hope you didn't think that was the truth. No, go and make disciples. How can you make disciples if you won't talk to them and equip them and help them with what it must be one of the biggest, if not the biggest, sin that people are in bondage to in this decade, the last 20, 25, 30 years? What are we doing? Are we playing church? Those days are over, man. We're heading into a deeper and darker time. We have to face these things, and we have to equip our people to be warriors and fighters, and we have to open this stuff big time Sunday morning, and we have to have houses of prayer, not just houses of teaching. So let's move forward in this year determined to make a difference, determined to break up the strongholds, determined to set captives free. Let's make a difference and let's make an impact. Thank you, my friends, for joining us. And let's move forward and make a difference this year. Have a good day and see you next time.
Do you want to be free?
Blazing Grace is a nonprofit international ministry for the sexually broken and the spouse. Please visit us at blazinggrace.org for information on Mike Genung's books, groups, counseling, or to have Mike speak at your organization. You can email us at email@blazinggrace.org or call our office in Chandler, Arizona at 719-888-5144. Again, visit us at blazinggrace.org. Email us at email@blazinggrace.org or call the office at 719-888-5144.
This program was sponsored by Blazing Grace Ministries.